Hey everybody, what's good? This is the Blacker Than Usual podcast, a series of politically based conversations that unpack the underlying gaps within Black culture, business, and relationships. Your host, J-Dub, that's me, strives to address the crucial conversations that will strengthen the connection towards moving our culture forward. Listeners should expect an informed conversation from personal experience and thought-driven insight on the top issues affecting our Black and Brown communities. So with that, sit back. We're back. Hey, bruh. Hey. Another episode of Black Than Usual. This is part two to our voting matters, political parties, and social capital. And I don't think that was enough. If you heard the last one, it was just about 20 minutes or so. I try to make it brief. Try to keep it real short. Just keep it real. And I think I had some more things I wanted to touch on, too. I went to my notes later. And I was like, hold on. There's still some other key factors about voting and why it matters. Still in the lane of political parties and social capital, but there's a few more key things I need the people to know. Off top, let's get straight into it. We ain't gonna waste no time, y'all. District-based elections. We ended talking about, in episode one of Voting Matters, prospective voting, what else? The different ways the different PACs and interest groups are put together, partisan, nonpartisan, function of political parties, and the whole social capital building process, what that looks like, the benefits that come from it, and stuff like that. But a few things we left off. How does the elections even happen? You know, this is how we strategize and put the voting power and galvanize organizational skills for it through political parties and social capital. But how does the actual vote, the tallies, the process, the numbers, the digits, how do they come together? When do they come together? Where can we vote? Things like that. We're going to talk about that real quick. First things first, district-based elections. You know, it's like, where do you live in the city? I'm just going to speak in Nashville specifically. Plenty districts. Plenty areas. 35 even. Where do you live on this map? Where do you support the community? As in schools, as in grocery stores, as in roads, sidewalks, streetlights, stop signs. These things that we patronize every day and use subconsciously, not even knowing it. But they are specifically controlled, if you will, and governed and sought over in specific districts. What district do you live in? That will determine your electoral, your election-based area, and your council person who you have representing you. Definition of district-based is a territory or subdivision for electing members to a legislative body. It makes it easy. Now, here in Davidson Metro, Nashville, we have 35. So you could be right on the district line, may come right down your street. Your next door neighbor may be in one and you will be in two. It's an invisible line. You don't see it unless you pull up the map. You want to see the map? Go to nashville.gov. Check it out. The resources are there. We need to have access to these resources and they're actually there. We just got to go to them and find them to realize who is in our district to decide who can represent our legislative bodies properly. Generally, only voters who reside within the districts are permitted to vote in an election held there. So, again, to that example, your neighbor lives in one and you live in two. Your neighbor in one can only vote for a candidate that's running for one. And you can only vote for a candidate that's running for District 2. Sounds kind of crazy. Like, damn, I can't vote for my neighbors? No, not necessarily. Depending on your district. That's how I set up. It makes it equitable. It makes it fair, if you will. Doesn't put someone in a trick bag. It gives people a different voice. Your neighbor may be on some other stuff that you not on. So let your neighbor go ahead and do that. Your neighbor may be two blocks over. three blocks over, a whole neighborhood subdivision over, and then that's District 3, and so on and so forth. But it matters. District-based elections, this is how that process works. Proper representation to your area, to the things that concern you in the community. How do we get this started? I mean, now I know what the process is, Doug. I know where I can do it. How do I even do it? Well, you can go register to vote. Again, Nashville.gov, you can go in and register right now. There's great organizations in the city, in the state, in the town called Equity Alliance. Just go to EquityAlliance.com. You can go in there and check out prime locations to register to vote. You can do it online through the website, I do believe. And if all that fails, again, Nashville.gov. You can register at any time, y'all. But let me give you a little historical legal background. Have you heard of the Motor Voter Law of 1993? I had to slow that down because I can't say that. Motor Voter. Somebody wild came up with that. I don't like that. Motor Voter. Somebody got a good laugh at it. I ain't laughing because it's a tricky thing to say. Motor Voter Law of 1993. What is that? It aimed to increase voting registration by allowing citizens to register to vote when applying for a driver's license. So you driving around, right? You in the whip. So you got a driver's license. When you register to do that, in most states, now you're registered to drive. When you said, this is my car, this is the address I'm putting it to in this county, it automatically gives you a voter registration. You should soon have a card in the mail saying I'm registered for this area. Shout out the Motor Voter Law of 1993. Now, what was they doing before 93? I don't know. I'm probably going to have to look it up now because now I'm curious. Let me write that down. Before 93, I do believe you had to just go and register your car and go somewhere else to register to vote. Possibly a library, maybe even a church, community center, or the election poll, the election commission office. But after 1993, something different came. Was that Clinton did that? Possibly. But y'all look that up, check it out, and see who put that in place. That was a good thing there. Made it easier. Especially for us black and brown folks. Make sure we register subconsciously. Unadvertently, it helped us out. So that's good. Now, let's go and talk about the primary process. Primaries are basically before the election. You know, is when we're narrowing down the candidates. Like here in Nashville, we have 50-11 candidates running. It wasn't really an official primary, but the primary's time is like a month or two. And federal elections, it may be 3 or 4 or 5 months out. Maybe even 6. For example, most conventions are coming up in 2024 in July for the presidential, and the actual primary start about March, April-ish. So what's that? That's about 3-4 month turnaround. You got most of the conventions happening in July, August area, sometime in June. And then maybe 5 or 6 months after that, it's the election in November. Kind of that. That's to the primaries, Warren. But there's a couple of type of primaries I want to touch on. There's an open primary and there's a closed primary. What does that mean? I can go in to certain days, come out, can't come certain days? No, that ain't what I mean. An open primary is an election in which voters do not need to declare a party before voting, but they may vote in only one party's primary. A closed primary is an election where only registered members of a political party may vote. So, I'm registered a Democrat. It's a closed primary. This is the type of election where only I can vote for this specific political party. Republican can't vote for it. It's a closed primary. Opposite way around for an open primary. Election where voters do not need to declare a party. So you don't care what side I'm in. But I can only vote for one party. It's weird. It's if you declare you a Democrat or Republican, you get a certain type of ballot. If you don't declare in certain open primaries, you can get anybody ballot. It makes it real tricky. Matter of fact, it's disenfranchisement on the low. But there's two different processes for it, open and close. Just get registered. Once we get registered, you can ultimately vote how you want to vote. In some places, you can go, they'll ask you what type of ballot you want. That's the trick, man. They want to trick you up right there. That's why we study beforehand. So we don't come in there and one of these grandmamas and granddads give us the wrong ballot. And then we voting for folks we don't even know. This is why we study before. Proper preparation prevents poor performance. Study before. So the whole open, close thing, don't let that trick you out. We can circumvent that real good, real good. Now with that, now the candidates that are running, where they get their money? Hey, where they get their money? Multiple places. There's hard money and there's soft money. What are you talking about, Dub? You talking about quarters and dollars and cents? Kinda. There's hard money and soft money. Soft money is unregulated campaign contributions by individuals, groups, or parties that promote general election activities, but do not directly support individual candidates. So, contributions by a group, a clique, a squad, a gang on the east and the south side want to come together and support a candidate. And just their activities, their fundraiser, their cookout, the barbecue, the grill. But they do not directly support the individual candidate. So they just may just want to be on a flyer. You know, you go to a flyer and a cookout somewhere, the barbecue, the grill, the tea party. Shout out T-Rose Nashville. You'll see a logo at the bottom. Somebody done sponsored that. That's soft money. That's a group, individual, or a pack or party giving contributions to an individual candidate just to support. It's easy. We ain't gotta. Hey, this just because I like what you stand for, and it's not necessarily anything personal outside of that. That's trill. That's soft money. Now, hard money are campaign funds donated directly to candidates. Amounts are limited by federal election laws. Hard money. You got to put that on paper. Why? Because some people want to know who you get your money from. Now, back to the example. You at the cookout. You at the function. Did Donald Trump give this type of function? Who? This is either a large amount. It's sometimes limited to federal regulations. Certain households, I think it recently just changed to where individually per household you can give, was it $1,500 to $1,800 per person? But if you go more than $1,800, wait a minute, now you need to be registered as a corporation or business. You may need an LLC. You need some EIN numbers. Every political PAC, well, every candidate and bank account should have an EIN and an account attached. The money has to be traced. That's the hard money. Soft money, just picture it as your grandmama give me a couple of dollars and say, go get hot dogs for the kids. That's soft money. You get a big endorsement from a political pact or group organization. Kroger's want to give you a certain amount. I think corporate campaigns are like $3,000 up to $5,000. It changes, varies on state. But that's hard money. Basically, keep record of your finances. Sometimes people want to come up and Wesley Snipes you as a candidate. Hasn't happened recently around here in Nashville. I don't see no time soon. One candidate, I ain't going to say her name, but they was questioning some of her hard money transactions from one of her nonprofits years ago. And they tried to throw that on her and throw salt on her. And it was just a miscalculation, you know. But, it can come back if you're taking money from the wrong people and it's not being reported. All right. So, now that y'all got that piece, we're at the finish line. We're going to wrap this up, political parties and social capital. But I want to touch on social things real quick. Social capital also comes with social movements. We spoke on the PACs and the groups and how they come together. We discovered the different laws and the different things you can take. the social groups, they come together on different issues. There's position issues, there's wedge issues. Position issues on which the party differs in their perspective and proposed solutions. You know, the different parties, the different groups, the Democrat, Republicans. Y'all want health care, we don't. Y'all are pro-life, them jokers not. It just varies. Then there's wedge issues, a controversial issue that only that one party uses to split the votes in the other party. So again, abortion. Republicans are going to use it most likely to say pro-life. And if you don't support pro-life, then you and your party are wrong as a person. So that's not only just separating the party line in a division of, separate sides of the issue, separate positions on it. No, a wedge issue. I'm going to cause a wedge in your group, in your clique, in your pack, in your interest group to have y'all at war over something that's really just the other party's opinion. The other person, the other party's controversial issue at that. Wedge issues to start a mess. Position issues to stand 10 toes down and say, hey, we doing that this way. Different type of issues. All of these issues can be resolved. Social conflicts happen. Social capital, when it's done correctly, successfully, can turn all of that around. So I want to end it up here with a few factors that lead to success of social movements. Openness to democracy and respect for human rights. Social, economic, and cultural equality. I'm going to say that again. I just like the way I wrote that down. Social, economic, and cultural equality. Mm-hmm. Decentralization, government institutions, and decision making. Independent, accessible social media. Independent, accessible social media. That's what this is right here, the Black and Unusual podcast. It's independent. It's accessible. And it's somewhere on your social medias. That's just a shameless plug there for Black and Unusual. And not just this podcast, but other podcasts that are providing information that are bringing social capital to the forefront through social media. I dig it. We need it. We need, what did I say? We need it. We love it. We want more of it. Well, that's what we're going to keep doing. The decentralization of government institutions. Let's not make them a central resource. Shout out Nashville.gov for having resources for you. But when we can take that power away and give it to ourselves, that's building that social capital. Those social movements are putting that into our own hands and educating our own. Even Brother Malcolm said, only a fool will allow his oppressor to teach and educate his children. We're all children in Christ. You dig? If you follow that, you know, but we're all children to the higher power. Only a fool will allow an institution to only do that themselves. But we're not fools. We're not fools no more. Right now, we're getting the Black Fusion podcast. Give me Voting Matters 1 and 2 on political parties and capital gains for our social advancements, these social movements. Speaking of social, again, because I just like the phrase, social, economic, and cultural equality. Equality for all of us now. I know this is directly for our Black and brown community, but the real trickle down that's never worked should have started with the Black and brown. Everything else does, entertainment, life, swag, culture. Well, our political aspects of those have to be equitable, economically, and socially. These are all successful results from social movements. And last but not least, again, openness to democracy. This is what democracy looks like when we do it right. If not, we allow other people to come in and manipulate and possibly take it over and do us a grave disservice. Speaking of disservice, our 113th Tennessee General Assembly, for example. Respect for human rights, what they don't have. They have respect for their own rights, but not human rights. But I'm about to go on a tangent there, so I'll wrap it. That's it, y'all, for today. That was Voting Matters 101. Basic civics, nothing too out the box. I'm checking over my notes. Anything else I want to drop off while we land this plane? Buckle up. put your what they say, put your head rest in an upright position. We're landing, y'all. So breathe, woosah. You made it through the Black Unusual Voting Matter segments. Tell a friend. Share it with your cousin them, your auntie, your little niece and them to send to high school. They not learning none of this either. If they do, it's real quick, real brief, and not enough. You dig? So tell somebody. Somebody want to know the process, tell them it's Googleable. And just in case it ain't, and just in case you miss it, you forget a term, just go share them this podcast, Black Unusual, and we're going to touch on a lot of these different topics so our people can be well informed now and for many years to come. So, as always, y'all be good. Take care of yourself. Check on your people. And until next time, peace.